This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
They'll be here at the studios of KPFT 419 Lovett Boulevard in Montrose. If you've already trained as a phone volunteer, just call 713-526-4000 to sign up for a shift. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
On tonight's program, we're going to be talking to David Elliott from Washington, D.C. And he's going to be talking about, guess what, the presidential election and ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Also, Joan Devlin will be joining us from Iowa, and she's going to be talking about the Book of Weasels.
That's right, the Book of Weasels.
Oh, I can't
which
wait.
It's a comedic book about how weasels, gay and straight, can ruin lives.
Oh, I can't wait for that. That sounds great.
That's interesting.
Then Lily Roddy is going to talk to us about ENDA again. It's a hot topic tonight, so that's going to be real interesting.
Well, she's particularly going to talk about the lack of transgender inclusion in the proposed bill.
Only if she can get a word in edgewise.
Yes, there's a real echo in the studio tonight. And then we're going to be talking about the Race for a Cure. Executive Director Susan Coleman.
Of the
Susan Coleman, right. And because the concert's coming up by the Bayou City Performing Arts, and that sounds really exciting. I'm looking forward to that. This Way Out is coming up, but first, we should have David Elliott on the line with us. David?
There's still a light splashing.
They're working on
it. I don't think Glenn's been able to get the hookup yet.
Things coming up today's Monday, right?
Yes, Wednesday
is the caucus meeting, and we're going to be talking to some of the endorsed candidates that have been endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Yes, PAC.
And PAC, that's right. And if you haven't had a chance to talk to any of the candidates, it'll give you an opportunity, because at 6:30 there's a wine and cheese reception prior to the meeting at 7, and you can meet, greet, and talk with some of the candidates.
And that meeting's starts at what time?
7 p.m. exactly, but we have a wine and cheese reception at 6:30.
And that's where?
That's at Haven Center, right next to the Chocolate Bar.
We don't even need an address.
Everybody knows where the Chocolate Bar is. They're on West Alabama.
Well, we have David on the phone with us now. Good evening, David.
Well, good evening, Jack, and good evening, Deb. How are you two tonight?
We're good, and Jennifer's here with us.
And Jennifer's here, too.
And I'm sorry, Jennifer?
Yes, don't exclude the tea.
That's right. We've already had enough of tea exclusion here.
Oh, and what an awful night for me to exclude the tea. Jennifer, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Just don't do it again. What are you, HRC?
That hurts.
That really hurts,
director
David.
For the very trans-inclusive National Gay Lesbian Task Force, that hurts.
Yeah. Well, David, so what's new inside the Beltway and beyond?
Well, things are moving quickly out of the Beltway tonight, Deborah. First of all, I want to bring you a little bit of news regarding the presidential election, including a campaign finance report that's just been out, some new polling figures out of the state of Iowa. I want to offer up tonight my prediction for the outcome for the Democratic race for the presidency, who will win the Democratic nomination.
Another David Elliott prediction.
Yes.
You had picked Mitt Romney as the GOP candidate. Do you still hold with that?
I'm still predicting that Mitt Romney will be the Republican presidential nominee. Until tonight, I was not prepared to predict the Democratic presidential nominee. Now I am. I also want to discuss a little bit, and I know you have a guest coming on later tonight, and I don't want to step on that person's toes, but I do want to discuss what's coming out of Washington with regard to the suddenly non-trans inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I should now call it the so-called Employment Non-Discrimination
Exactly.
Act.
Exactly. It's the Barney Frank Discrimination Act.
Right, right. And the paradoxes and the ironies are almost too much to go into. But let's start off with some news about the presidential campaign, okay?
Go for it.
Because earlier today we learned that Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama raised $20 million in the third quarter of this reporting period, which ended at midnight last night. That was about $3 million more than he was expected to raise. We have not yet learned Hillary Clinton's numbers. We think that they're going to be somewhere in the $17 to $19 million range. So for the second consecutive quarter, Hillary will be trailing Obama by a little bit. I also want to talk about a poll that just came out yesterday. This was a Newsweek magazine poll that was done of Iowa Democrats. What's particularly interesting about this poll, my friends, is this. First, they asked Iowa Democrats overall, who do you like for your nomination? And the numbers were Hillary Clinton wins when you ask the question that way. She gets about 31%. Barack Obama gets about 25%. John Edwards gets about 21%. But then Newsweek asked the question. They narrowed their group down. They said, if you plan to attend an Iowa caucus, who do you plan to vote for? And among that population, suddenly, and for the first time, Barack Obama went into the lead with 28% of the vote. Hillary Clinton had 24%. John Edwards had 22%. So Obama's attempts to separate himself from Hillary and from the field, especially on the issues of Iraq and on the issue of change in Washington, D.C., change in government, appear to be working. And, you know, I want to talk about a little about how the mainstream media is really portraying this race, because it seems like a lot of the political pundits think that it's all over. That because Hillary Clinton has about a 20% percentage point lead in the polls nationwide, that she's going to be the nominee. It's a foregone conclusion. And I'd like your listeners to consider the fact that 4 years ago, at this stage in the nominating process, a guy named Howard Dean had a 20 percentage point lead. And look what happened to him. He went on to finish third in the Iowa caucus, and his candidacy basically imploded after that. And, you know, there's an interesting quote today out of the Obama campaign after the new fundraising totals were revealed. And I want to read this quote to you. It's from the Obama campaign manager, and he said, quote, many in Washington have spent the last weeks declaring the outcome of this race to be preordained and the primary process a mere formality. Yet in this quarter alone, 93,000 more Americans joined our campaign because they desire real change and believe Barack Obama is the one candidate who can deliver it. Now, I will grant you a lot of that is spin, but the fact of the matter is that as of today, more than 350,000 people have donated to Obama's campaign. That's more than all of the Republican candidates combined. It's more than any of the Democratic candidates by far. And when Obama is traveling around the country speaking, he's getting crowds of 10,000, 15,000. He drew 20,000 in Austin, Texas earlier this year. And that's a lot larger than any of the other candidates are drawing. And, you know, when it comes to predicting the outcome of political races, it's not all that different from predicting the weather. You know, you're predicting the weather, you're looking at barometric pressure, you're looking at the jet stream, you're looking at where high pressure systems and low pressure systems are developing, you're looking at what's happening with storm systems, and you're looking at similar things when you're trying to predict political elections. You're looking at, you know, the issue environment, you're looking at fundraising efforts, you're looking at voter enthusiasm, you're looking at, you know, what kind of attraction are candidates getting from the voters. And based on all this, I have to tell you all, I'm not ignorant of all of the polls that show Hillary, you know, with a big nationwide lead, but what I'm seeing on the ground is a grassroots insurgency that I believe is going to propel Barack Obama to a victory in Iowa, a victory in New Hampshire, and actually a victory when it comes to capturing the Democratic nomination for president.
Okay, well, we're going to...
That's a surprise.
That's David's opinion.
Yes.
I still want a feminist. So we'll just see about that, David.
Well, you're in good shape. Rush Limbaugh has already pronounced that Hillary's going to be the nominee.
Yeah. Well, see, the Republicans want her to be the nominee because they are trying to convince people that she can't win. And so that way Democrats won't support her. But I think she's going to get it. And I would like to see Obama as the vice presidential candidate.
You know, I keep going back and forth because there are things about Obama that I love. There are things about Hillary Clinton that I love. And there are things about John Edwards that I love. Although I have to say, when it comes to John Edwards, I like him on the issues. I don't necessarily like him as much as the other two, Obama or Hillary Clinton, when it comes to his personality.
Right.
So, you know, I'm probably, you know, I was like this 4 years ago and 8 years ago. I'm probably going to be going back and forth, you know, changing my mind about who I personally will be casting my ballot for. But nonetheless, my prediction stands. I am predicting today, and I hope that you all, Jennifer, Deb, and Jack, will hold me to it and remind me of it. I am predicting today that Barack Obama will be the Democratic presidential nominee.
We've got it on tape. We're writing it down.
We'll ask you again next month.
Well, actually, as we get closer and things shape up and the more primaries take place, I think that making, you know, you're kind of sticking yourself out on a limb at this point, but well, you know, that's why we talk about what's going on, so we can kind of watch it and kind of let other folks know.
Well, and Jennifer, I do this every election cycle. I am always out there first with a prediction.
And how often are you correct?
Well, you know, in 2002, I didn't do very well. Actually, I didn't do very well in 2004 either.
But you did in 06.
I did great in 2006, and actually...
You're on a roll then.
Well, in 2000, I called every state in the presidential race except for Florida and New Mexico. I predicted that Al Gore would win Florida, and George Bush
did the first time.
New Mexico. Well, you know, I actually think I nailed all 50 states. I think that the Democrats stole New Mexico because of voter fraud, and I think the Republicans stole Florida because of voter fraud. So there you have it.
Interesting.
But, you know, my time is short, and there's a very important other matter that I want to get to.
What's that?
You have about five more minutes.
Well, you know, last Thursday, Congressman Barney Frank, who, of course, is openly gay, sold out the transgender community by announcing that he was backing a new version of the now so-called Employment Non-Discrimination Act. This one excludes transgender people, but it goes a little bit further than that. And I want to make sure people are clear on this issue.
Well, it excludes them by them not being included in the act, right?
Well, but also, it excludes the notion of gender identity.
Right. Yes, that's the key part about that.
Yes, so you can't be, under this new legislation, hypothetically, you cannot be fired for being a lesbian or being a gay man, per se, but you can be fired if your boss happens to think that you fit their stereotype of a lesbian or a gay man. So if I go into work, and let's say that I am a straight man, and I am wearing an earring, God forbid, or...
Which part, the earring or the straight man?
I am wearing, you know, I am dressed in a way that someone might, I don't know, somehow conclude that I'm gay.
You have on a pink shirt.
I have no protection if, in fact, I am straight. I just happen to be dressed that way. You know,
there's no way of proving that you're not. That's the whole point of that law. It's created a scenario whereby you have to prove a negative.
Right. Exactly. And the LGBT, and I do say that, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, reacted with anger and fury and organization today, and I want to tell you about what happened. This
Please.
Morning, more than 90 national and state LGBT groups signed a letter that was hand-delivered to Congress, urging Congress to reject openly gay Congressman Barney Frank's new, quote-unquote, compromise, and go back to the previous version, which I believe, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong on this, has passed both chambers.
Yes, at some time or another it did.
And the all of these groups submitted a letter to Congress asking Congress to back an Employment Non-Discrimination Act that protects everyone in our community, and to oppose any substitute legislation that leaves some people behind. And that's the thing, you know. This isn't like the 1990s when, you know, there was a gay rights group out there that was willing to compromise and to leave some people behind.
But what name, prominent name, was not in that list of over 90?
Actually, you know, I was putting my research together, and Jack, I believe, but I'm not certain on this.
I have the list of all of the names in the letter, and
well,
I
Jack,
don't see the Human Rights Campaign.
To the H's?
I think I'll let Jennifer do that.
I am looking through the list. I happen to have it printed here for the interview later. I don't see the Human Rights Campaign anywhere on this list.
Okay, well, I
do see one of the board members, Donna Rose.
I wasn't factually certain of that, and so
I have a copy of the letter here. Yes,
but I will say my former employer, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, not only is on the list, I'm not trying to take a pot shot at HRC here, but the fact is that since about 1999, 2000, NGLTF has made an effort to be very inclusive.
Yes.
And NGLTF helped organize the 90 people, the 90 organizations that signed this thing.
Well, when I worked on the march in Washington in 93, already NGLTF and some other groups were beginning to make sure that there was trans inclusion, and it was part of the platform. And both HRC and Barney Frank has a long history of selling out the trans community, and I'm not really sure what the basis of that is, of why he felt the need to present this alternative, you know, if it was the idea of, okay, we can get these people protected and leave these other people out, but that doesn't seem to be the logical conclusion.
No, and the fact is that he has done more harm with this watered-down version substitution. That's what he's done, because of one of the examples you gave me, there are five more examples of where he watered down the legislation to harm gay and lesbian people. Yeah.
Well, we'll be having Lily Roddy on later in the program to talk more about ENDA. We want to thank you for being with us once a month, David, from your, as Jack calls it, your day job with the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And thank
Which
you.
Which there's some been really interesting news items coming up about that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Ray Hill will have those on the prison program. So thank you, David, once again, and we'll hear from you next month.
Thank you, David.
Well, thank you all so much for having me, and I have to say that I wish that I were in your studio tonight to hear Lily talk, because that's going to be an interesting presentation.
You can listen online.
Okay, then.
www.kpft.org.
Fantastic. Jennifer, yes. Deb, and Jack, you all have a great evening, and I just want to say best wishes to the listeners of Queer Voices.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
When I was a girl, Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian. Stand up for your rights, stand up and fight. You can be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian, I can be a lesbian. Stand up for my rights, stand up and fight. I can be a lesbian. When I was a girl, Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian. Be erotic as you like, it's your body, it's your right. You can be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian, I can be a lesbian. Be erotic as you like, it's my body, it's my right. I can be a lesbian. Said to me, you can be a lesbian. See women in the night, what a beautiful sight. You can be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian, I can be a lesbian. See women in the night, what a beautiful sight. I can be a lesbian. When I was a girl, Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian. You can be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian, I can be a lesbian. Have a lover, have a home, have babes of my own. I can be a lesbian. When I was a girl, Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian. Be proud, be free, with dignity. You can be a lesbian. Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian. With women sing your song, many voices strong. You can be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian, I can be a lesbian. With women sing my song, many voices strong. Be proud, be free, be dignity. Have a lover, have a home, have babes of my own. Keep women in the night, what a beautiful sight. Be erotic as delight, it's my body, it's my right. Stand up for my right, stand up and fight. Be a lesbian. Oh, when I was a girl, Mama said to me, you can be a lesbian.
And of course that was called I Can Be a Lesbian, and that was Judy Small. This is Queer Voices.
With us on the line is Joan Devlin from Iowa. Good evening, Joan.
Good evening, Jack. How is everybody in Texas?
We're just fine.
And how is everyone in Iowa?
Oh, everyone in Iowa is about ready to get married, so.
But I thought they took that away.
You know, they're still working on it. I have my hopes. I have my hopes that my state will be the state that brings gay marriage to the rest of the country.
And then will you have someone ready to wed?
Trust me, I always have someone ready.
Well, that's our Joan. So, Joan, you're going to be talking to author Teresa Bain?
Yes, Teresa Bain is the author of The Book of Weasels, which is her latest book. And she has also written a very Halloween-y book called The Actual Factual Dracula. The two books are polar opposites. We'll mostly be discussing Book of Weasels tonight, though, because that is her newest release, and it's very funny.
So this is a book about little furry animals? Like,
well, actually, this is a book about people, both gay and straight, that we've all unfortunately run into on occasion.
So what's the definition of a weasel?
Well, that's exactly what the book is about. She's got quite a few definitions of a weasel. Among them is, you know, a weasel is someone who never pays back the money you loan them.
Mm-hmm.
A weasel is someone who picks the worst possible moment to come out at family gatherings. And in the book, she's got a picture of someone announcing as they're lowering the coffin into the ground, I'm gay. So, you know, she's done her own drawings for the book. And she's got quite a few definitions or versions or of weasels.
I think Glenn's trying to get her on the line so that you can actually talk to her more about this whole idea. I think in Dilbert they use the term about weasels. It's kind of a trendy phrase.
I think that's funny because my friend was dating a guy who was a total jerk, and we had been calling him Weasel for about 5 years, and now suddenly you're hearing that word everywhere, which I just think is funny, because we thought we were so original. I guess everybody had to copy us.
Yeah, well, you kind of get this vision of this sneaky little creature kind of running here and there and, you know, being hard to catch and something just kind of unsavory about it. So,
right.
And you've read the book already?
Yes, I read the book. I met the author. I met Teresa Bain and Gina Farrago, who is another author we're going to be interviewing this month, at something called Dragon Con. And Dragon Con is one of the largest sci-fi fantasy conventions in the country. It takes place in Atlanta over Labor Day weekend. And it's very, very gay friendly. In fact, I spent a lot of my time in the Star Trek room talking about what they're calling the last minority, because I don't know if you know this, but there's actually going to be a gay theme in one of the newer Star Treks that's out.
I think I had heard about that.
Actually, the surprising news is there's going to be another Star Trek.
Isn't it Kirk's son? That's
Kirk's nephew.
Okay, I knew it was a relative. Even an old Trekkie like me who really only watched the original television show, I still, every now and then,
As we matured, we became Trekkers.
Oh, Trekkers. Okay, so are we ready to go with Teresa?
Hello. Hey, Teresa, this is Joan Devlin, and you are on KPST, and we were talking a little bit, I don't know if you could hear us, about your newest book, which is The Book of Weasels, and we were kind of, the question came out is, so how do you define a weasel? And I was saying you do it quite well in your book, with illustrations. So tell us a little bit about how the book came about, because it's a little different than your Dracula compendium.
Oh, it's completely different. If you laugh at my vampire book, there's something very wrong with you. My weasel book turned out because, it's kind of passive aggressive against people. It was very good therapy at the time when I wrote it. Weasels are those people in society that the only reason they're alive is because it's illegal to kill them. These are people who do, you know, horrible, nasty things that, they deserve. They never had somebody, for instance, tell them, don't do that. That's wrong. Or don't do that, that's rude, or have you not ever considered the possibilities of your action? And, you know, it's very preachy to do that, but when you put the little sayings underneath the smarmy little cartoon character, it comes across very funny. And then after a few moments, a little bit thought-provoking, and then if there is enlightenment, it's your own responsibility.
Great, and give our audience kind of a few examples.
Okay, well, one of the captions is, and the caption itself is not initially funny, which is the bloodthirsty weasels take their animals everywhere with them, or their pets everywhere with them. But the drawing of it is a weasel in a surgeon's outfit, and he's operating on somebody, and he has his alligator with, like, a little bow on his head and a little collar and a leash, and the weasel's, like, flinging excess organs at the alligator. And this is sort of in response to people who put poodles in their purses and travel with them, and then, you know, you're sitting on the bus, and all of a sudden there's some dog barking at you or nipping at you, or, you know, fleas are coming from it.
And what was this something that kind of built up over time? Because actual fact, you know, from actual factual Dracula to, you know, bloodthirsty weasels, it's kind of a jump. So was this just kind of something you had built up over time when, you know, as we go through life and we come across these people, you know, that we have our frustrations every day? Or,
yeah,
you know, were you just kind of starting to do this as therapy?
I'm sorry, I started working on the vampire book 5 years before the pub date, so I guess it would be like 6 years now. And the weasels, I had started doing, it became like a running joke in the family. I would call somebody a bloodthirsty weasel and point out their behavior. And occasionally I would do a doodle on some notebook paper or my mother-in-law's kitchen countertop because she left me unattended with a pen or something. And she actually collected all of the drawings that I did. And after a long time, she said, you know, you have enough for a book here. You should look into it. And I did. I looked into it, and now I have a book on it.
And what's the response been to the book so far?
It has been super good. I've had lots of positive response from it. Orson Scott Card, who is, you know, the epitome of science fiction writing. I mean, he's won more Nebula Awards than anybody ever. He is a huge fan of the weasels. He just loves them. And I have the most wonderful blurb of what he said about my weasels up on my website. People are inclined to go read it. It's just brilliant. I couldn't have written anything better.
And what is your website?
My website is teresabain.com, Teresa with an H.
And can people order the books on your website?
Absolutely. They can go through my website. They can go through my publishing company's website, which is Nedeo Press, N-E-D-E-O Press, or even Amazon if they like, or any bookstore.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the bloodthirsty weasels. Can we expect a part two? Because the funny thing is, my friend had actually purchased it, and mm-hmm. we opened it, and we were sitting there, and I swear we were just rolling on the floor laughing, because for almost every single cartoon and caption, we could think of somebody who fit it. Now, in her case, it was her ex, who, I hate to say, probably fit 99.9% of them. But even beyond that, just, you know, people you see on the street or people you deal with at work, I mean, it was just hilarious.
Well,
and, you know,
is.
It was an equal opportunity book.
It, you know, one of the first books I sold, one of the weasel books I sold, was at a convention, and a woman had come by and said, you're going to be here all weekend, right? And I said, absolutely. And she said, not this moment, but I'm going to come back at the end of the convention. If you don't mind, would you please write in this red pen, this is you, next to every single one of the weasels in the book, because I want to give it to my husband when I serve him with divorce papers.
Wow.
I was like, well, absolutely, anything for a fan. There is a sequel, in fact, that I have written. It's called The Bloodthirsty Weasel International Family Cookbook. And it's not out yet. It's finished. It's in the can. But my publishing company says they're waiting for a better time. They don't think the world is quite ready for it yet. The Weasel's International Family Cookbook is a little bit more raw and a little more tongue-in-cheek. And although it, you know, in the beta testing got a tremendous response as far as being funny went, it made too many people think too hard, and that wasn't so funny. So I might have to, you know, sell it myself, PDF it online, and let people download it.
And you do your own drawings too, correct?
They're line drawings, you know, a la Gary Larson of The Far Side. I went to art school to learn how to do all that, so proud graduate.
So how did you, okay, so you went to art school to learn how to do all that, and you've got the weasels. So where did the Dracula thing come in?
Well, I've always loved vampires. I don't know why, but I always have. And I always wanted to be a writer. And I had decided I was finally going to write, you know, my vampire novel. And I wrote some sample chapters
did everything you're supposed to do, and I got a publisher interested, and they wanted to do a trilogy because at the time that was the big thing. They weren't hiring, they weren't buying singular books. They were only buying trilogies. And now, as far as, you know, fiction writers go, then now publishing companies want, like, open-ended contracts. They don't, you know, they don't want trilogies. They want this forever arc. But at the time, it was for a trilogy. And I had it all planned out. And everything was settled except for, you know, what, how I was going to make my vampires different from every other vampire out there on the market. And I did a little research, and a little research turned into a lot of research, and eventually, after the end of a year, instead of having written the first book in the trilogy of fiction I was supposed to write, I had inadvertently written the first, I'd say maybe 100 pages of that nonfiction book that you have. And I showed that to my publishing company, and they said they were much more interested in that as a series than they were in the fiction novel that I had been working. And they signed me for a contract to do 6 books in the actual factual series. And the first is the nonfiction historical compendium of vampires. There's over 900 species of vampires in it, set up in a field guide format so that if you're a researcher or a writer or historian, you know, everything is there at your fingertips, quick and easy glance. You can tell, you know, what you're looking for pretty concisely.
So are you going to do the other 5?
Yes, I am. The next book that I'm working on right now is Actual Factual Demons, A Grimoire of the Damned, and then that will be followed by Akfak Angels, A Host of Angels, and then Fairies, and then Heroes of Mythology, Items and Places of Lore, and The Book of Gods. And these are all the...
You're going to be very busy.
I am, and they're set at 2-year increments. So I'm going to be busy, I think, till like the year 2015 writing this series of books.
And I hope we can see more Bloodthirsty Weasels in there, too.
I think so, too. I'm really excited about getting the International Family Cookbook out. And, you know, hopefully if I get enough interest in it and people want to go to Amazon and, like, do reviews, that my publishing company puts a lot of stock in his Amazon reviews. If I get a whole bunch more, they might be interested in picking up the cookbook idea sooner than later. So,
great. So let our audience know again how they can get any of your books, actually.
Yeah, if they go to my website, which is Teresa Bain, TheresaBane.com. It's mostly set up for my vampire, but there is a link on there for weasels, and that will take you to my weasel page and show you all about the little critters, what a weasel, and you're a weasel, and it's a weasel, the 3 main characters of the book. And you can order it through my website. You can order it through my publishing company's website, Nedeo Press, NedeoPress.com. Or you can go through Amazon or any online retailer or any Barnes & Noble's, Border Books, whatever you like to do.
Great. Thank you so much, Teresa Bain. Teresa Bain is the author of, give us the real titles again, because I have them on your business card.
Okay. The vampire book is called Actual Factual Dracula, A Compendium of Vampires. It's nonfiction, so it would be in that section of the bookstore. And the other book is called The Bloodthirsty Weasels, On the Loose and Buck Wild.
Great. Thank you so much, Teresa Bain. You're listening to Queer Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM.
Thank you, Joan.
Baby.
all from 1999, the album Let the Rainbow Shine, that was influenced by Queers. This is Queer Voices.
And now here's a message from KPFT Election.
Hello, my name is Mark Muich, your local station board election supervisor. To ensure the fairest and broadest based elections, we have extended our current LSB nomination period by 1 week to Wednesday, October 3rd, ending at 10 p.m. Both listener members and staff are encouraged to gather more petitions and bring them to our next petition party next Wednesday at the KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. Please get involved, help us make your station even better, and run for the board.
You're listening to radio powered by the people, KPFT Houston.
This is Jennifer Renee, and I have in the studio here Lily Roddy, and we're going to discuss some of the news that came up this last week concerning ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Basically, on Tuesday, a substitute version of ENDA was submitted to Congress by Barney Frank, one which was in the substitution excluded trans inclusion, gender identity, or expression, actually bans gender expression, which is makes it illegal to be anything other than the male or female that we grew up with, Ozzie and Harriet, I think. What is that? Lily, tell me some history.
Okay, I'm sure that that's exactly right. Good evening. It's good to be here and good to be with you all once again. I wanted to talk about a little bit about the history of really sort of the how they do divide and conquer with different groups and different organizations. Because I was thinking back to, I wasn't particularly there at this time, but when they ratified the 15th Amendment, and what they did was that they separated out the women and African Americans from voting. And they said, if you'll support this, then the women can get the vote later. And so what they did is they separated the vote, separated the black men and the women. And of course, the women didn't get the right to vote, you know, until essentially 1920, when the 19th Amendment was voted in. And even then, they attempted to separate Caucasian women and African women once again to create this sense of divide and conquer. And because one of the things that apparently the people in charge are good at is being able to pit us against ourselves. And one of the things that I found really encouraging was that so many different organizations came out for, you know, trans inclusion, gender identity inclusion, and lots of GLB organizations, you know, stood up for us, because I thought that was very good. Although in the midst of the crisis, there really wasn't that many groups that were against the bill as it stood.
Yeah, as I
2015.
Right. When it came out, within a matter of hours, 27 GLBT national organizations came out and condemned the dropping of the trans inclusion language in ENDA.
Exactly.
And that was on Thursday.
Yes, and today on the EqualityTexas.org website, there are over 90 different organizations, both national and statewide organizations, that are supportive.
Now, earlier in the show, when we were talking to Washington, I have a copy of that letter, and I made the comment that HRC was prominently missing from that list, but I understand that's changed in the last hour or so.
It absolutely has. I just got word, actually, from our good friend, Phyllis Fry, that the HRC had signed the letter in support, and they were not in favor of stripping gender identity, and they wanted to remove the other bill. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of that other bill, but to go back and restate the original House Bill 2015.
I guess the question bears the question, where were they 5 days ago?
Well, I'm sure that...
I don't expect you to have an answer.
Well, exactly. I mean, we have the trans community certainly has a history with being disappointed by HRC in the past. And many times we've gotten reassurances that these things would not happen again. But nevertheless, they have continued to happen. And I'm personally very sorry that they didn't step up sooner. I mean, they could have taken the lead role, and, you know, and it would have been a good thing. And, you know, we could have all really stood behind HRC as an organization that supported all GLBTIQ people. So,
well, and the thing is that as far as political, you know, or GLBT advocacy organizations, you know, it's the 500-pound gorilla, and it wasn't even in the room.
It certainly wasn't. It was obviously missing.
Well, and I believe, I'm wondering how much of that work came out of Houston to get that changed.
Well, I'm sure a lot of it came out of Houston and, you know, and a lot of pressure from probably a lot of different places, because certainly we, you know, they needed to be a part of this. Because it seemed that even with Speaker Pelosi and Barney Frank, that they were, you know, sort of not listening. And again, Barney Frank has been a really great advocate of gay and lesbian issues, but certainly never a big friend to the trans community.
No, he never has. And I hope you don't mind. I earlier dubbed it the Barney Frank Discrimination Act.
I see.
Yes. And I pulled up some stuff on it. For those of you who you can go to Lambda Legal. I don't have the email address in front of me, but I'm sure you can Google it. They assessed the current bill that's being marked up to be voted on, and there's some very telling things in there, not just the exclusion of transgenders or gender identity, but gender expression has been specifically excluded, and they have put some things in there that will harm gay and lesbian people, and watering it down in such a way it helps no one.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the things that I say frequently is that, you know, no one is free unless we're all free. And if people can't get that, because ultimately these sort of things that encourage prejudice, you know, eventually are turned against people who don't know that it will be turned against them. Because once they start allowing gender discrimination simply because it looks like it's initially aimed at trans people, well, then it's going to come down to being aimed at all kinds of people just simply because of their gender.
Well, that's why after I read the Lambda report, as well as catching some other information basically from it, I discovered some, you know, very horrendous things in the bill that ultimately will do more harm than good if this is allowed to pass. Now, realistically, if it passes the House, Teddy Kennedy's hasn't put anything in, so nothing's going to happen. This is all almost an exercise in futility. It's more of a show, dog and pony show, than anything else for the Congress to do something to fulfill the promise that they had given the GLBT community to vote on it. But based on what I'm reading, who would want it?
Exactly. And though it could be no, and many of the, I know one of the congresswomen who is a lesbian, you know, actively opposed the bill and wouldn't sign it simply because transgender inclusion wasn't involved in the bill, which means that the larger picture is that we'll all suffer if it's not passed in its entirety.
Well, and that's the sad part about this. And it seems that I don't know. I'm just a talking person here.
That's
on
right,
the
you're
phone.
Just a person
and,
you know, here on the radio.
I am just a radio personality, and I stretch that completely. Is the fact that, but I do have an opinion, is that HRC missed their opportunity to step in as the 500-pound gorilla and stop this by talking to Barney Frank before, as soon as this word came out. But they sat on it for a couple of days and let other organizations speak out. And, of course, Barney Frank and Pelosi and them didn't listen.
They did not listen. Not at all.
I mean, I don't know what the deal is. I think Pelosi wants to have something to carry to the HRC event that she's going to speak at, which selling out... No, selling out is a bad word. I like what the San Francisco newspaper said, that the transgenders have been thrown under the bus again.
Once again.
Call 911. The transgenders are under the bus. Significantly, though... The benefits that we can get, all of us, but transgenders as well as the GLBT, all of us together in this community, what are the benefits from having this?
Well, first of all, is that that it will put pressure from the top down to all groups and all different organizations, employers, etc., that is going to allow us to be seen as real human beings, and definite pressure from the government saying that, you know, we need to be treated and respected as people, which is not the message that's given, simply because, just because of the way they look at us, they don't necessarily take time to understand us. So that's definitely one benefit, is just having the sense that, you know, that this is actual legislation. Secondly, it would certainly give us some greater legal standings to deal with job discrimination issues, since I think in the most recent court case, transgendered were not able to use the, I forget which one of the laws to protect themselves. Was it the fireman or the policeman who was transitioning on the job that was not able to have support with the discrimination case?
Correct. And there's a indications, you know, that all of us, but what I was getting to, well, one of the things we're talking about transgender, but the fact is that by taking out gender in inclusive language, it has also created something that I don't think anyone realizes, and most people don't. And, you know, this is the Barney Frank Discrimination Act includes some language in there that is so harmful to gays and lesbians, because, I mean, you can be fired whether you're straight or not.
Exactly, by the way you act.
That's, if you came in and you decide you were a little flamboyant one time, your boss could decide that he didn't like the way you were acting. It was out of the gender stereotype, and then fire you. This is incredible. Religious institutions, they've always had a problem with GLBT people, but in this bill, that the Barney Frank Discrimination Act, what it does say, if they just think you're gay or lesbian, you can get fired, or they don't have to hire you and can't be sued. So this isn't accomplishing anything.
Well, this sounds like the don't think, don't tell, fire them right away bill.
Yeah, well, this is the don't ask, just fire them bill. And the sad part is that what they're creating is a scenario by which you have to, sort of like the military, you have to prove that you're not something to get your job.
Exactly, and I really think that the way the other bill was written was such bad legislation. I'm assured that would just only make it absolute that it would be shot down, no matter how it was, even if it was totally supported by the heads, the people in the government, and then the final process of Bush signing it.
What should we do, Lily? What's your suggestion?
I think that we should actually continue to pressure and contact our local representatives. I mean, I've been on email all day and talking to people on the phone. I think it's the only way that we're going to get people to listen to us is for us to be out and to tell people what's going on and who we are. And because otherwise, you know, nothing's going to happen. And I wanted to say something specific about this. This is one of the things I've learned about in the few times that I've gone and done lobbying in the state capitol, is that an actual visit by an actual person carries so many different, carries so many votes with it in terms of a percentage of who you are. Whereas if you just sign an email petition, then it's sort of a ratio of 1-to-1. But it's sort of like if you go up there into the Capitol and voice your opinion to your local representative as a person, then you know you're like 1,000 people. I mean, that's the, you know, sort of the way that they look
at
you.
That's the multiplier they use when they figure that. One thing that I was thinking of, when you go over the Barney Frank Discrimination Act, is that it can possibly undo current legislation within states and municipalities concerning non-discrimination and undo those things that advances. So passing this bill that Barney Frank has put forth may be more dangerous than we think. It can go far beyond that. Now, if I might suggest Please. To all of us out there, and that is, all politics are local. It may be time for Houston to have a non-discrimination ordinance, one that addresses employment as well as housing and some others, and not just the GLBT community, but everyone, because this is one of the few cities of the top 10 that doesn't have a non-discrimination ordinance. Maybe it's time to tell your council members that it's time to have that. And if not, you know, talk to your political organizations and get them active in doing that.
And for sure, stand up and take the lead in this process, you know. And as I was saying earlier, you write a letter, a handwritten letter is so much more significant to your local representative, whoever that may be. If you don't know who they are, then get on. I know that EqualityTexas.org has a list of the different representatives, particularly from Texas, and make yourself heard. Because if we don't stand up, then what we'll get is a stripped-down bill, which protects no one, and just as you were saying, eventually causes us much greater damage, and I'm sure that it will create much greater damage even to people who don't fall into the GLBT initial set.
Yep. Always is the unforeseen consequences of this bill. The current Barney Frank Non-Discrimination Act, that's going to be the one where some of the gains we've already made as a GLBT community will be taken away from us because of the influence of a national law. Now, the reality is, whatever it is, I seriously doubt that George Bush would sign it. But with this language in it, he might just sign it because he knows that it will undo and give his religious right friends exactly what they want.
Exactly. I'm really happy about the fact that so many different organizations did get on board. I think that that's a really good sign. I also think it's a really good sign that we actually have legislation where we have the words gay, lesbian, bi, transgendered involved in legislation, because certainly I know you remember when, you know, when it was just illegal to be yourself, to walk down the street.
In the city of Houston, at one time, thanks to Phyllis Fry and other political activists here in Houston, they rescinded the mask law here in Houston, where if you were wearing clothes of the opposite sex, you could be arrested and jailed. Women, if their buttons button on the wrong side. Obviously, Barney Frank wants to go back to those days, because this bill talks about gender stereotyping again.
And we'll have to wear our jeans that zip up on the side instead of the front.
Oh, God, I hate that. Thank you, Lily.
You're so
welcome. This is something that isn't going to go away. We'll talk about it more. We'll see what happens when it comes up later on in the show. We've got News Wrap and This Way Out, as well as the Race for the Cure, Executive Director of the Susan G. Komen Houston affiliate, Michelle Ostrener, will be here. I want to thank you. This is KPF Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 29th, 2007. Bishops of the Episcopal Church, the U.S. wing of the 77 million member global Anglican Communion, announced this week that they would exercise restraint by not considering any new candidate for bishop whose manner of life presents a challenge to the church. In a statement released after an intense six-day meeting in New Orleans, during which the church's spiritual leader, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, paid a visit, they also vowed not to authorize official prayers to bless same-gender couples. Bishops in conservative regions of the church, mostly in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, had demanded unequivocal pledges from the Episcopal Church to disavow those actions by September 30th, the deadline set by Anglican bishops meeting in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, earlier this year. Lesbi-gay advocates accused the Episcopal bishops of selling out to conservatives, but some traditionalists criticized what they called a cleverly worded declaration of defiance. The dispute over homosexuality has been festering within the Anglican Communion, a loose federation of 38 national churches around the world, since the Episcopal Church consecrated openly gay Bishop V. Gene Robinson of New Hampshire in 2003. They elevated Robinson, who lives with his male partner, despite a declaration by Anglican bishops at their once-a-decade Lambeth Conference in 1998 that homosexual relationships are incompatible with Scripture. Some conservative critics of the Episcopal statement said it was issued only to ensure that the next Lambeth Conference could be held as scheduled in England in July 2008.
The center of the storm, openly gay Bishop Robinson, called the New Orleans meeting the hardest day since my consecration, but said he thought the Episcopal bishop's document was fair. The head of the Anglican Church in Australia, Philip Aspinall, said he believed that the Episcopal House of Bishops has responded positively to all the requests put to them by the primates in our Dar es Salaam communique. Bishop David Beige, the Vicar General of the Anglican Church of Southern Africa, said he welcomed the statement for the simple reason it gives us more space and time to talk to each other. The spokesman of the Anglican Church of Uganda, Aaron Mwisige, said the U.S. bishops deserve to be appreciated for making such a good decision. But, he added, I also appeal to the gay bishops to repent and come out to live normal lives. The head of Kenya's Anglican Church, Archbishop Benjamin Nzimbi, wasn't satisfied with the statement at all, saying it was not enough. Nigerian Archbishop Peter Akinola, who's led the charge against U.S. Episcopal efforts at inclusion, wrote on his website this week that instead of the change of heart, repentance, that we sought, what we have been offered is merely a temporary adjustment. Akinola set up the Convocation of Anglicans in North America in 2005 to oversee breakaway Episcopal congregations in the United States opposed to Robinson's consecration. Anglican leaders from Nigeria, Rwanda, Kenya, and Uganda have violated Anglican tradition that they minister only within their own provinces by consecrating defecting Episcopal bishops. In this week's statement, the Episcopal House of Bishops also said they deplore such incursions and call for them to end. Akinola has threatened to boycott Lambeth if the U.S. bishops he's consecrated aren't allowed to attend. They haven't been invited by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Robinson has been invited, but won't be allowed to directly participate.
Giles Goddard, who chairs Inclusive Church in Britain, told the Associated Press that attempts to reconcile the split were now effectively dead, especially since some breakaway conservative Episcopal churches have already realigned themselves with conservative bishops in Africa. Commitments by traditionalists at the Dar es Salaam meeting to listen to the concerns of gays and lesbians were not carried out with any degree of seriousness by those people who have most to lose by genuine engagement, he said. The Reverend Colin Coward, director of Changing Attitude England, said he believed that the U.S. bishops had satisfied the ultimatum and laid responsibility for the future of the communion at the feet of their conservative critics. If they continue to press for the exclusion of the Episcopal Church, transgress provincial boundaries, and decide not to attend the Lambeth Conference in 2008, he said, they will take responsibility for provoking a tear in the Anglican Communion and will have withdrawn from the fellowship.
In other news, the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Act passed the U.S. Senate this week, despite a threatened veto by George W. Bush. The measure has already passed the House, but the two versions of the bill must be reconciled before heading to the president's desk. In a bid to thwart the threatened veto, the Senate's chief sponsor, Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts, attached the bill as an amendment to a critical defense spending bill. He was among several to eloquently urge its passage during Senate debate.
Nobel Prize laureate Elie Wiesel said, "Indifference is always the friend of the enemy. Indifference is always the friend of the enemy, for it benefits the aggressor, never the victim, whose pain is magnified when he or she is forgotten." Today, we can take a strong stand against indifference and intolerance. Now is the time. Because, as Reverend Martin Luther King reminded us, the time is always right to do what is right.
Federal hate crime laws already cover people on the basis of race and religion. The Shepard Act adds sexual orientation and gender identity. By passing this bill with comprehensive language, said John Hoadley of National Stonewall Democrats, this legislation will provide law enforcement agencies with the tools needed to fully prosecute bias-motivated crimes. Many Republicans and their socially conservative supporters have argued that adding sexuality and gender identity to hate crime laws would muzzle the free speech rights of religious leaders to denounce homosexuality from the pulpit. Proponents stress that the measure targets actions, not words. FBI statistics show that 1 in 6 reported hate crimes is motivated by the victim's sexual orientation. Judy and Dennis Shepard, the parents of the infamously gay-bashed to death Wyoming college student Matthew Shepard, called the measure an essential step to erasing hate in America, and we're humbled that it bears our son's name. The White House has not yet indicated if Bush will veto the defense bill to kill the Shepard Act.
Portugal's new penal code, which took effect September 15th, includes several new laws concerning sexual orientation, according to a report on the PortugalGay.pt website. Same-gender couples are now treated the same as heterosexuals in areas such as domestic violence, murder, the penalty is higher if the victim is one's partner, and obstruction of justice, which has a lower penalty when one is protecting a partner. The code also enhances the penalty for murders committed because of the victim's sexual orientation and criminalizes the organizing, assisting, or promoting of group actions that foment discrimination based on sexual orientation. Those offenses carry a 1 to 8 year prison sentence. It also makes it illegal to promote violence against a person or group of persons based on sexual orientation in the media or on the internet under penalty of 6 months to 5 years in prison. The code also equalizes the age of consent and laws on sexual abuse, 14 if there is no abuse of inexperience, or 16 otherwise. The maximum penalty for any crime in Portugal is 25 years in prison.
But some members of Rwanda's parliament are calling for a law to make homosexuality illegal, according to a report this week in Kigali's New Times newspaper. The African country has no laws against same-gender sex, and while Deputy Francis Kaboneka claimed that there were few cases of homosexuality in the country, we need to have a law against this vice. Our culture only allows a man to have a relationship with a woman, added Deputy Henriette Sabera, and that is why anybody caught in that act should be punished. The chairman of the Kigali Bar Association, Gatera Gashabana, said that if we happen to have such a case, then we would refer to some articles of immorality in the penal code. But attorney Christopher Niwemugabo argued that the punishment can come up if only there was use of force, but if the two agreed upon it, then there's no reason why they should be punished. Rwanda's Minister of Justice, Tharcisse Karugarama, told the newspaper that the penal code is being reviewed and punishments for homosexuality have been considered. Issues of prostitution and homosexuality are sensitive, he said, but the government has more concerns to give prominence to than those.
And finally, a judge took U.S. Senator Larry Craig's request to withdraw his guilty plea to a disorderly conduct charge under advisement this week. The plea to the reduced misdemeanor offense stemmed from Craig's June 11th arrest in a men's room sexting operation at the airport in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The conservative Idaho Republican has denied any inappropriate behavior and has denied being gay. He's announced that he'll stay in office for the time being, despite calls from Republican Party leaders for him to leave and his earlier statement that he'd resign on September 30th. Hennepin County Judge Charles Porter said he probably wouldn't rule until sometime in October on Craig's request. Meanwhile, the infamous airport men's room where Craig was arrested is getting new stall dividers that drop nearly to the floor to make it much more difficult for those seeking sexual encounters. Gay cruising websites had already named that restroom as a popular location for so-called tea room sex, and some visitors have since been treating it as a tourist attraction. The Minneapolis airport has more than 80 restrooms, but only two are getting the new dividers, including the one now known for Craig's arrest. Airport spokesman Patrick Hogan said installing new stall dividers in all restrooms there would cost a prohibitive $1 million, but that they'll spend about $25,000 for the two targeted makeovers. Disappointed tea room devotees may rally around a new chant. Mr. Hogan, tear down those walls.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 29th, 2007. Written by Greg Gorton and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This is Queer Voices.
Hello, this is Deborah Bell, and with me are two lovely women. One is Estelle Ostander from the Susan G. Komen Foundation, Houston affiliate, and the other is our friend Colleen Fisher from the Bayou City Performing Arts Group, and they're here kind of for a joint reason, which is kind of like, how did that happen? We don't know. But as you may notice, from the month of October, there's like pink ribbons everywhere. You cannot go anywhere without seeing pink or seeing a pink ribbon or something to remind us that it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And of course, the Susan G. Komen Foundation is the premier group that works on, well, Michelle, say what Komen does exactly. Say, give a little bit of the history of the organization and then what its main work is.
Sure. Our mission is to save lives and end breast cancer forever by empowering people, ensuring quality of care for all, and energizing science to find the cures. And we do that by educating the community about breast cancer awareness, about providing funding in our local community for breast cancer screening, diagnosis, and treatment, and also funding breast cancer research. And the Komen Foundation was actually established 25 years ago. Nancy Brinker promised her dying sister, Susan G. Komen, who died in her 30s from breast cancer, that she would do everything in her power to end breast cancer. And 25 years later, Komen has really just revolutionized what we do and think and know about breast cancer.
And there are many groups that work on the issue, but Komen has really spread out. Like I said, everyone knows the group, and you know, there's a lot of people. And one of the things that is done every year for a number of years now is the Race for the Cure.
Right, and right now there's 120 different races across the United States. There's even a Race for the Cures in Italy, Germany, and Puerto Rico. So we're an international organization. But our Race for the Cure will come up on this Saturday, October 6th. We're expecting about 28,000 people to come out and participate. We have a 5K competitive run, a 5K non-competitive run, 5K walk, and we also have a half mile a kids' K and family walk that ends at the Kids for the Cure Corral. And we expect about
18... So I could do that half mile.
You certainly could. And we expect about 1,800 breast cancer survivors. And our Race for the Cure is truly more than just a walk for a cause. It's a very emotional event. All the survivors wear pink T-shirts, and we have survivors who are newly diagnosed. We have 30-year survivors. It's really a message of hope that we have out there on that day. So I encourage everybody to come out and join us.
Yeah, and of course I can't help but think of the Melissa Etheridge song, I Run for Light, Run for Hope, because she is a survivor, and it's something, of course, we try to educate on this program always about symptoms, treatment, all the things that women need to know. It's not the leading cause of death for women, heart disease is, but it is something, you know, very personal. You know, as women, it's just something, it's part of our anatomy, it's part of our identity and our sexuality. So there's just many layers involved. The American Cancer Society does a lot of work on it, and and then there's groups like the Montner Project that's specifically for lesbians in Washington, D.C., which is somewhat the model of the Assisters group here in Houston. But Susan G. Komen has made a commitment to outreach to lesbians.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Komen National has a lesbian advisory council. And we certainly locally, we work in the lesbian community to provide education around breast cancer. And, you know, the two biggest risk factors are being women and getting older. And we all do that, straight or gay.
If we're lucky, we get to get older.
That's right. And, you know, for lesbian women, often there's issues of not going to your doctor as frequently as a heterosexual woman. So not getting the clinical breast exams as often.
And why is that?
Just, you know, if you're not having children, though many people in our community
are trying not to have them is more like it. You don't have to go in for birth control or a pap smear.
Right.
Well,
right.
I think there's also issues of, which is something I struggle with, of health insurance coverage. And if you're not in a hetero relationship where you can get same-sex partner benefits, that sometimes becomes an issue for lesbians.
Absolutely.
Exactly. There's many, many, many things. So, in fact, several years ago, I worked at the Montrose Counseling Center through a grant through the Komen Foundation doing outreach to lesbians. And the project started off with breast cancer, but expanded to all those things we face as women as we get older, such as menopause and osteoporosis. And it's something to keep in mind that it is something that happens to lesbians, and there is support and help out there.
Absolutely. And I do want people to know that if you don't have insurance, we do fund 20 different projects in the greater Houston area. We service the 7-county area, and these are specifically for women who do not have insurance, who need access to screening, diagnosis, or treatment. So if you haven't had a mammogram and you're 40 or over, if you are younger than 40 and you have felt something that's not right with your breast that you know is abnormal, then please call the Komen Foundation at 713-783-9188, and we can refer you to someone who can help free of charge.
That's great to know. And is that also the number if people want to get involved with the race?
It is the same number, and we have more information on our website, which is komen-houston.org. We are going to have walk-in registration at the Galleria near Nordstrom's on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week, and we will have same-day registration on Saturday morning if you get there early. You've got to be there by 6. Opening ceremony starts at 7:45.
And that's where it takes place, is in the Galleria area?
No, we have moved about 3 years ago to downtown.
Because I noticed the banners are up downtown.
Yes, they are. We start near Bagby and go down West Dallas to Waugh, come back down Allen Parkway, and our Survivor Celebration is in Sam Houston Park.
Very good, very good. And that's Michelle, and say your last name correctly.
Ostrander.
Ostrander. And then Colleen Fisher, right? Following on the heels of the race, everybody's tired, they're worn out, they've raised money, they're feeling good, and so there's going to be this really special event that is also going to help benefit the Komen Foundation, but is something that's coming from the GLBT community. So what is Bayou City Performing Arts doing?
We have teamed up with Komen in a really special project called Sing for the Cure. So on October 23rd, 2007, over at Jones Hall, 2007, I always say that.
That's good.
I know, it's the year. Can't lose it. Don't forget it. Mark your calendar. Just in case. Over at Jones Hall at 7:30, we are going to be performing. It's going to be a night of celebration and observance and of hope for all women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer and their loved ones and the medical community and anyone whose life has been touched in some fashion will be moved by the performance that evening. It's going to encompass a lot of different aspects. We have brought in Annalee Jeffries from the Alley Theater, who will be co-narrating along with Deborah Duncan from KHOU Channel 11.
We'll
be
classy.
Oh yeah, we pulled out all the stops. And she'll be emceeing and co-narrating that evening, and it's just going to be an amazing night. Tickets have a ticket range price of $30.
No, don't give the amounts.
Oh, okay.
But just say there are a range of ticket prices.
There are a range of ticket prices available by visiting our website at www.BayouCityPerformingArts.org, or you can call our office at 713-521-7464.
Now, this is the Bayou City Women's Chorus and the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston?
Correct.
And combined in what is called the Bayou City Chorale.
Yes, we are presenting this is our world debut of our mixed chorus of Bayou City Chorale. We have had several occasions where the men and women have sung together before, but they've sung as separate entities. So
right.
It was Gay Men's Chorus of Houston and Bayou City Women's Chorus. But this is the first time that we are presenting ourselves as Bayou City Chorale, and the excitement level from the two choruses is palpable. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, that must have really poured some real bonding between the two, more so than before.
Definitely. We have a real distinct pleasure in Houston of having two choruses that absolutely love to perform with each other. Sometimes the other gay and lesbian choruses in the country, they participate and sing with each other, but there isn't always as tight a family bond as our choruses seem to have for each other. The guys were so on board with when the women debuted 2 years ago, and they have been nothing but supportive and fantastic for their sister chorus. And with the great thing about the two choruses together is that because the women's chorus is all-inclusive, we've have straight women and lesbian women and singing all together and just doing something that's so great for the community. And the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston, when we were putting all of this together, we were thinking how amazing and how important was it for all of those women in our lives to help gay men through the AIDS crisis.
Exactly.
And what better thing could a gay men's chorus give back to the community in breast cancer but to do a show where people's lives can be touched and changed.
Now, the show was something that was written before.
Yes, it premiered in Dallas with the Turtle Creek Chorale and the Women's Chorus of Dallas in 2000.
And it came about through individual women telling their stories? Or?
Yeah, the writer of the, I want to say it's Pamela Martin. I could be wrong. I left the CD case in the other room. Took lots of different stories. She took women's journals entries. She took an aspect of the medical community. She looked at spouses. She looked at children. She wanted to get an overall picture of what living with breast cancer is like.
And it's not just the individual that's affected, but it affects
everyone.
Everyone, yes.
Exactly. So kind of how we've been approaching it is it's sort of humanity's look at breast cancer. And we just want to weave a tale of hope and caring and love and reflection and celebration for everyone who has either gone before us, having, you know, passed away from breast cancer, or simply celebrating the triumphs that we have already today.
Yeah. I think that this message of hope is because there has been so much advancement over the last, I guess, two decades in particular, that women are more knowledgeable about self-exam, finding it early, getting treatment. It's not as scary because they know that they're a survivor. The survivor rates are up. The treatment methods are less invasive. You know, there's new medicines and so that for Komen to be able to do the work that it does and then to help make all of that possible, and then again for community to support. So the two ways to support are to go and take part in the Race for the Cure, which is this Saturday,
October 6th.
Call
713-783-9188.
And the website again
is Komen, Komen-Houston.org.
And if people just want to find out about some things about breast cancer in general or how they can become more involved in the organization, they can check out that website. I love the web. And then Colleen, the Sing for the Cure.
Sing for the Cure, October 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at Jones Hall. That's a Tuesday evening. And you can find out more information at BayouCityPerformingArts.org or call 713-521-7464. And a really special part of why Michelle and I came here together this evening is our women's chorus will be performing I Will Survive at the Survivor Celebration in Sam Houston Park at Race for the Cure. So we're really
awesome.
We're excited to share this
preview.
Exactly.
Come on this Saturday.
And we should be going on around 10:15, 10:30-ish. It's going to be a fantastic moment to share together.
Is there a way for someone to help with the Race for the Cure, not as a racer or a walker? They can volunteer in some other capacity?
Certainly, we need volunteers on that day. And you can also pledge and help sponsor another participant. So if you know someone who's running, like Colleen, you can go to her webpage and make a donation in her name for the Komen race.
Oh, that's really good. And, you know, I have to just send out some thoughts to the women that I've known in my life who have been lost, who are surviving, are getting treatment, and you know, we say it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but it's really Stopping Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So thank you, Colleen and Michelle, for being with us here on Queer Voices. And I think we have some special music that we're going to now. What is it?
This is the version of I Will Survive that the ladies will be singing, and I thought it was a perfect tribute to Michelle and I being here this evening.
So here you have it on Queer Voices.
Just turn around now. You're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried?
Queer Voices.
He's not the most powerful man in Iran, but he's apparently the most verbose, and he loved being linked with the father of modern science. Later on this program. Alvaro Orozco, a Nicaraguan man currently living in Toronto, faces deportation from Canada because, among other things, the country's Immigration and Refugee Board didn't believe he's gay. Orozco, who's now 22, ran away from home when he was 12 after being beaten by his father for exhibiting apparently gay characteristics, hitchhiked across Central America and Mexico, and then swam across the Rio Grande into the United States, where he was arrested and put into a detention center for a year. He was released after promising to return to Nicaragua, but found refuge with a church-based group. However, they teach that homosexuality is an abomination, so he was reluctant to reveal his sexual orientation to them. He made his way into Canada in 2005. Orozco's story has been widely reported in Nicaragua, where gay sex is illegal. So, coupled with his family's attitude, his fears of violence against him if he's forced to return to his native country seem to be more than compelling. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching spoke earlier this year on our program with Orozco's lawyer, El Faroukaki, following the Immigration Board's denial of asylum. The attorney's request for a review of that decision was denied, and the next step for Orozco was what is called a pre-removal risk assessment hearing in mid-September to determine if he would in fact be in danger if he's deported. Kitching spoke with Kaki again for this update.
When last we spoke about Alvaro, I mean, basically, what to bring people up to speed on what's happened since this initial decision, you guys filed, first of all, you filed to reopen his refugee board hearing, and then you also filed for a new pre-removal risk assessment, right, which where they kind of assess whether Alvaro would be in danger if sent back to Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And, you know, if so, that can sort of... I guess keep him here. Now, I remember you saying that you weren't able to get the Immigration and Refugee Board ruling overturned, or you weren't able to get them to reopen the case. But what happened with the pre-removal risk assessment request? Because that was what we were waiting on this week, yeah. As I recall.
I went with Alvaro and with Suhail, who is his worker at SOY, supporting our youth, and went to the immigration office, where he received the decision, and it was interesting because I think that if Suhail and I had not been there, they would have detained him because he was asked a series of questions on his address and his location and blah blah blah. The decision was negative.
Do they actually believe he's gay now? Have we gotten past that at least?
Well, they didn't say they didn't believe that he was gay. They sort of tried to poke holes at it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
The officer says in there that the only proof they have of him being gay are letters from people, and that's only hearsay. And at the same time, these letters fail to comment on whether they think he would be in danger. Well, if they're only hearsay about his sexual orientation, then what weight would anyone saying anything about his sexual orientation in a letter be, or his danger for that matter, right? So,
well, yeah, like if they don't want to take a person's word for it that he's gay, why would they take a person's word for it that he'd be in danger in Nicaragua?
Yeah, just very, very odd. And then
what are they actually looking for? Do they want him to like have sex right in front of them? I mean,
I don't know.
Isn't it always kind of hearsay?
Yeah, they also didn't look at these articles that we had submitted, which were Canadian articles that had been translated verbatim into Spanish and published in Nicaragua, and they wouldn't look at them, saying that they had not been translated into English. But that's ridiculous. You take an English article, translating it into Spanish, and then spending public money, to translate it back into English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we said these are the same articles, here they are, but they were published in Spanish in these papers. Yeah.
What did they say? Did they say, you know, he has to go back to Nicaragua?
Yes, but actually not directly to Nicaragua. Because he entered Canada through the United States, he would be sent back to the United States.
Mm.
Unless he makes prior arrangements and shows them to immigration of going directly back to Nicaragua.
So do you have any other mode of recourse? Can you appeal this decision?
Yeah, you can actually go to the federal court and do a judicial review of this decision and then apply for a stay of removal. At the same time, Olivia Chow's office has requested a minister's permit.
So where is Alvaro right now? I mean, is he, you know, staying with somebody? Is he going to have to take refuge somewhere if this drags out past his slated removal date? I mean, what's going to happen to him?
Yeah, he's staying with people right now.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to renew his apartment, not knowing what was going to happen and stuff, right? So,
mm-hmm.
In terms of what will happen, well, that will depend on what happens in the federal court.
Is he going to have to go into refuge somewhere in order to stay in Canada?
Emergency applications can be brought to the federal court.
Mm.
So hopefully all of that will be dealt with
before it gets to that.
Yes.
That was This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching speaking with Canadian attorney El Farouk Kaki about gay Nicaraguan refugee Alvaro Orozco. A deportation date for Orozco has been set for October 4th. We're staying tuned.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
Sir Francis Bacon gives birth to science. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Francis Bacon was born in London in 1561. He was counselor to Queen Elizabeth of England and knighted by King James I. Bacon encouraged the study of comparative anatomy, disease symptoms, and the effect of different treatments. Noted in textbooks for his development of the scientific method, he was proclaimed the father of modern science. Those same texts avoid mentioning that he was gay. But letters written amongst Bacon's relatives referred to his orientation at a time when homosexuality was punishable by death. In fact, Bacon's brother-in-law was beheaded for being gay. During an experiment in 1626 to test meat preservation by freezing, Bacon ventured out into a blizzard to stuff a chicken with snow, caught pneumonia, and died a month later. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Ed Chapman.
There's nothing funny about the plight of gays and lesbians in Iran, but an outrageous statement became a laughing matter this week, for a moment. This Way Out's Lucia Chappell reports.
The queer activists among the hundreds who gathered to protest Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's September 24th Columbia University appearance could never have guessed that their concerns would end up headlining the event. Antagonisms around Ahmadinejad's visit to New York City to address the 60th session of the United Nations General Assembly had been growing for weeks and were particularly heightened by his request to lay a wreath at the site of the 9/11 terrorist attack that destroyed the World Trade Center. Most of the demonstrators at Columbia came to denounce his denial of the Holocaust and his anti-Israel rhetoric. Others challenged the Iranian government's human rights record. Those issues, and many of the charges leveled by the Bush administration, were articulated by University President Lee Bollinger as he introduced Ahmadinejad, and were continued during the question and answer period moderated by Dean John Coatsworth of the School of International and Public Affairs. But none of those matters got such a dramatic reaction from the largely hostile audience as did Ahmadinejad's response to the query read by Coatsworth involving the status of women and LGBT people.
Women are now denied basic human rights, and your government has imposed draconian punishments, including execution, on Iranian citizens who are homosexuals. Why are you doing those things?
Freedoms in Iran are genuine, true freedoms. Iranian people are free. Women in Iran enjoy the highest levels of freedom. We have two vice presidents that are female at the highest levels of specialized fields. In our parliament, in our government, in our universities, they're present. In our biotechnological fields, your technological fields, there are hundreds of women scientists that are active. In the political realm as well. It's wrong for some governments, when they disagree with another government, to sort of try to spread lies that distort the full truth. Our nation is free. It has the highest level of participation in elections in Iran. 80%, 90% of the people turn out for votes during the elections, over half of which are women. So how can we say that women are not free? Is that the entire truth? But as for the executions, I'd like to raise two questions. If someone comes and establishes a network for illicit drug trafficking that affects the youth in Iran, Turkey, Europe, the United States, by introducing these illicit drugs and destroys them, would you ever reward them? People who lead cause the deterioration of the lives of hundreds of millions of youth around the world, including in Iran, can we have any sympathy to them? Don't you have capital punishment in the United States? You do too. In Iran too, there's capital punishment for illicit drug traffickers, for people who violate the rights of people. If somebody takes up a gun, goes into a house, kills a group of people there, and then tries to take ransom, how would you confront them in Iran? In the United States, would you reward them? Can a physician allow microbes, for you, symbolically speaking, to spread across the nation? We have laws. People who violate the public rights of the people by using guns, killing people, creating insecurity, sell drugs, distribute drugs at a high level, are sentenced to execution in Iran. And some of these punishments, very few, are carried in the public eye, before the public eye. It's a law based on democratic principles. You use injections and microbes to kill these people, and they're executed or they're hung. But the end result is killing.
And drug smugglers, the question was about sexual preference and women.
Mutlaqa. Ma dar Iran.
In Iran, we don't have homosexuals like in your country. We don't have that in our country. In Iran, we do not have this phenomenon. I don't know who's told you that we have it.
The good news about what Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad had to say was not just the Columbia University students' reaction, but the fact that the mainstream media seemed to understand why these people were laughing. Many of the major news outlets highlighted the moment, although the soundbite version loses the full impact of his rationale for repression. There have been many replies to Ahmadinejad's assertion that Iran has no gays and lesbians. Paula Edelbrick of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission noted that Colombia's forum provided the first opportunity to confront a sitting Iranian president about the mistreatment of LGBT people. Well-documented instances of persecution have included incarcerations, beatings, public lynchings, and just last August, the closing of a newspaper that published an interview with a lesbian poet. The infamous execution of two gay teenagers in 2005 sparked protests around the world. Earlier this month, the British government decided to reconsider granting asylum to an Iranian lesbian who fled her country after her partner was arrested and tortured. Human Rights Campaign President Joe Salmanis said, Ahmadinejad's denial that there are gay people in Iran shows the extent to which he devalues the lives of the many citizens his government has and continues to violate. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Sherry Lund, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Heather Kitching, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Ed Chapman, and Lucia Chappell contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by direct, tax-deductible donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. To request a CD or cassette copy of this week's program, or sign up for our weekly email program information messages, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Alicia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KRFC, Fort Collins, Colorado, 6RTR, Perth, West Australia, Trans FM, Broward County, Florida, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
That was pretty fun. Well, I guess I wasn't as tight as I thought I should have been. Oh, yeah, I think I could maybe even, hey, let's do it again.
Please, 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 from the album of the same name. Produced in the year 2001, that was Annie Engel. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we have on the 11th is National Coming Out Day. And there's a couple events going on, and this one in particular is on Thursday, October 11th. It's Thursday. Well, I can't even see straight anymore. The Montrose Counseling Center, and as full disclosure, I now work for the Montrose Counseling Center, they're going to deliver a simple but powerful message. Straight people are taking stands alongside the GLBT community. It's a national event. The Houston part of it's happening at MCC. Seven straight nights for equal rights, and it's during this week, the week next week, which is the 7th through the 14th. This will be happening Wednesday. See, this is Wednesday, October 11th. Thursday. It must be Thursday, October 11th through the 12th, 6 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's a sharing of, at 6 p.m. they're going to start with the sharing of stories and awareness. Allies will be offered a chance to share their coming out stories and giving the chance to affirm their commitment to equality. There will also be opportunities for participants to get their word out to elected officials through letters and messages. At 7 p.m., there's a documentary being screened, In-Laws and Outlaws. At 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., candlelight vigil accompanied by an overnight letter writing campaign. And if you would like more information, you can go to the website. Well, actually, it's not listed here, but do a look up Seven Straight Nights for Equal Rights, and they'll show you what's happening in all the different cities across the country. We've got a couple of things coming up. Well, actually, this Saturday, Lily Tomlin's coming to town.
That's right. Yes, Lily's going to be here.
That sounds really interesting. Also,
one ringy dingy. Two ringy dingies.
Houston GLBT Community Center is having their event this Saturday night. You can go to their website. On Sunday, Decadent Dessert, that's happening at South Beach, starting at 4 p.m., and that's the major fundraiser each year for sisters, which is a great, great event.
Absolutely.
And, of course, this Wednesday is the caucus meeting, starting at 6:30. There's a reception. The meeting starts at 7. And that's the Haven Center, which is 1846 West Alabama.
That's correct. Right next to the chocolate bar. Everybody seems to use that as their marker, so we might as well do that, too. One other thing. I'm working on a report on a new movie, The Bible Tells Me So. It'll open on October 19th here in Houston at the Greenway, but it is it's interesting. It is the a story, it's a documentary, but taking GLBT families and talking about how it relates to the Bible, and it's pretty well squashes a lot of the right wing garbage we get sometimes. I'm doing my part to, you know what, the religious right.
And on the 20th is the Houston Women's Center, Women's Festival, happening downtown at the, what's that called, the space where they have that. It's across from the Ajonica Theater, Houston Women's Center. Oh. The square, the public area.
Oh, the Tranquility Park?
No,
it's not that.
No.
Everybody, do y'all know where that is?
yes. Just missed me. It's they have events down there, performance events.
You have caught us tap dancing. I want y'all to know that.
Well, and it's the Houston Women's Festival, and I believe that's the website, HoustonWomen'sFestival.org. There's also a dinner that evening, the Sam Rainburn dinner, which is a big Democrat.
Sam Rainburn, yes.
Along with the Bayou City Performing Arts event is also happening downtown that evening. So it's a lot of start. And then on the 22nd, early voting starts for the November election.
We talked about India again. There's more to be found. We'll keep an updated story on what's going on. I'll post some information based on tonight's show and stuff to the blog, to the caucus blog. Full disclosure, I'm president of the caucus. So if you want to hear some more, I've got some more things to say that I couldn't say on the air, but I can put it on the blog. You can go there, thecaucus.org.
Yes, what is really interesting is you just do a Google search for caucus blog, and now, of course, maybe mine's been filtered because of the way I search things, but the first one that comes up is New York Times blog, and then it comes up with the caucus blog.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so at least in my search engine, that's the way it works.
And, of course, the big announcement is tomorrow is my birthday. Yes, I've survived another year, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but that's just too bad. Actually, I'm 12 years old.
Well, and I know how old Jennifer is. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and you can, the best way really is just do some searching on us, what's going on in the GLBT community, because there is a lot of things going on, and it's just a matter of finding it out.
Absolutely. And we'll try to do our best here on Queer Voices, because we're here for you.
Yes, if you're interested in getting your organization some publicity, you can give us an email shout, jack@queervoices.org, and we try to cover as many different organizations and events that's going on in the community that we can. Of course, we're not full-time staff here, so we do what
we can. Absolutely. And if you want to reach me, you can reach me at dearjennifer@aol.com.
And thanks for joining us. We want to thank all of our guests tonight, which includes David Elliott calling in from Washington. Joan Devlin talked to the author, The Book of Weasels.
Yes, and Lily Roddy, and we talked about Inda.
And then The Race for the Cure, which is a event that also is going to be a beneficiary of the Bayou City Performing Arts, which happens on October 20th.
This is Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The Real School, also known as Dragon Valley, invites you to join us on Saturday, October 20th, for a wonderfully unique open dialogue on education. Chris Mercogliano, author and longtime teacher and co-director of the Albany Free School, will talk about his new book, In Defense of Childhood, and about the 3 decades he spent at the Albany Free School, a multicultural inner-city school based on freedom and democracy. Following the presentation, there will be a reception and book signing. The event will be on Saturday, October 20th, at 2 p.m. at The Real School, 5020 Dixon Street, Houston. Houston 77007. This event is free and open to the public. For more information, go to therealschoolhouston.org or call 832-767-0404. For information about the Albany Free School, go to albanyfreeschool.com. This is KPFT Houston.
And now here's a message from KPFT Election.
Hello, my name is Mark Muich, your local station board election supervisor.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.